very good to be able to get together on this first Sunday of 2015 to be with you, to worship God in spirit and truth. We hope for all of us a very spiritually profitable year. We want this to be a great year for our association, relationship one with the other. If all goes well with the congregation, that progress is made in the lives of each and every one of us. I thought I did have the brochures ready and a sampling of them back there for you to take if you wanted to take some this morning. But I can see that my production of gospel meeting brochures has not improved over the years. I remember, and I told you this, and you may have remembered it, I don't know, but years ago when I guess I was in my 30s teaching in Tennessee Bible College, we were having a gospel meeting out at the Antioch Church, and we had our brochures made up, placards at the printers, and they were already made up. We'd spent money on those, and I looked at that, and my goodness, the date was wrong. I'd misspelled the preacher's name, and I misspelled the word gospel. It's just pitiful. I got my black marker trying to correct it. It was a mess. And I haven't done a whole lot better this time. But when I get that corrected back there, I'll have you some to work with. Or if you want to send those to anyone of your friends or neighbors or loved ones. I love the book of Genesis. And it's amazing the way that God started writing His book. You know, there's a lot involved in writing a book. And of course, God knows that better than any of us down here. He sees our pitiful efforts, but when He writes something, of course, it's perfect in every way, in all aspects of literature. And when He starts the Bible, He has Moses write for us the first five books, what do we call the Pentateuch, the law, as it were. And that very first book that we have, Genesis, it's the start. It's the beginning of things. And as you study it, as you well know by your life's experience with that book, there are just so many things talked about on the way to God's, you know, initiating the scheme of redemption. He's giving us the first glimpse into why it's necessary and how it comes about, and even initial promises that are made that He's going to keep thousands of years later through Jesus Christ. The book of Genesis is an incredible book for a lot of reasons. And I want to do something this morning that I've never done before in a lesson. I want to sort of analyze from the book the more prominent ways that problems in social intercourse developed on the earth. You know, God knows all about His book. And in the midst of all that detailed story and the development of a certain race of people to get us Jesus Christ down here, He gives us so much interesting, sometimes embarrassing history of humankind. And He talks about so many problems that arose in the early epoch of human existence on the earth. Why do we have so many problems on the earth? Why do we have so much friction and tension and conflict among people on the earth? We know that it all starts out with developing a bad heart toward God. And initially, you know, chapter 3, sin is committed by Adam and Eve. They turn against God. And I'm not, even though that's the foundation point that undergirds the way that everything else develops, I want to pick it up down here. Between men, this lesson is called Initial Conflicts Among Men. Initial conflicts among men. Just in the first book of the Bible, how did all of these problems get here? What was the means by which they surfaced? What were the issues that engaged the minds of people so that they had problems with one another? And I'm telling you, I'm not saying that I got all of them, and you can classify these in a different way. And there's overlapping between some of these, but I picked up the most prominent problems in Genesis. And I want us to just kind of classify and see the topics that they surround. How did these problems develop? Number one, of course, from chapter 4, talking about problems between people. We don't see any problems between Adam and Eve, you'll notice. The way that Moses describes them, even after the sin is committed, even though Adam will say, I did this because of the woman, there is nothing said about any sort of conflict between Adam and Eve. We'll come back to that a little bit later for one observation. But right here in chapter 4, you've got this problem between Cain and Abel. We're talking about social conflict. Conflict between humans. How did it arise? Well, there are various passages that give us insight. Genesis 4 is the first. 1 John 3:11 and 12, we've talked about that in Sunday morning Bible class. Cain's works were evil and Abel's were righteous. But when you go back to Genesis 4, the problem really came to a head over worship. There's a sense, you see, in which even worship is called a work. We sometimes say, well, we worship and then we go work. Well, there's a sense in which, you know, everything we do is work. That word covers that. And worship is a work. It's an expression of the human spirit. It entails activity. And Hebrews 11:4 says that by faith Abel offered, he offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. He did it by faith. He took God at His word and did what He said to do. Cain didn't. And so the issue came to a head. There might have been other things. You know, I don't know if they had any disagreements or fusses in the field or around the flock. I don't know. The Bible doesn't say anything about that. But the way this came to a head, at least, was you've got a right worshiper and a wrong worshiper. The conflict came to a head over worship. That's the first one in the Bible. Isn't that amazing? You see, the difference between what the church does on Sunday and other times we meet for worship and what the world does is a very big deal. Even though I know I've lived long enough to see my brethren try to play it down, you can't do that. You can't play down what God has required. You can't compromise the form of worship that God requires. You can't become like Cain and say, I've got an alternative route to worship. My worship's going to be just as good as yours. Watch and see. There's no watching and waiting about it. It's already been declared. The difference is humongous. And so we still find God's faithful folk on the earth worshiping in spirit and truth, and everybody else that worships, worshiping wrong. It's still very clear to God. It ought to be clear to God's faithful people. But every generation has to be taught. And the same old battles have to be engaged in, because up and coming generations don't learn the lessons of history and don't listen to their parents and their grandparents, don't study Scripture, and then go out and act like the world, claiming to be faithful children of God. Well, the first instance of conflict, and it developed further into murder, was over worship. I take worship very seriously. And you should too, and I think you do. That's why it sometimes bothers them when I've been preaching, and I would see people just taking advantage or just acting like worship is nothing. And it's a bothersome thing. It's bothersome to me, and I know that God disapproves of vain worship. Number two, the second way that conflict developed in the book of Genesis, we come to chapter 6, and it's because of heart, just absolute heart corruption. Why can't people get along? And by the way, you get to chapter 6 and verse 11, it's corrupt, there's violence. You can move from an absolutely distorted and corrupt and polluted heart all the way to violence. Now, there are plenty of corrupt people that would never think of being violent. But there are plenty of corrupt people that are violent. Let me just take it one step further. Society frowns on the violence. It sometimes supports the corruption. The church supports neither. God's book supports neither. Let me say that again. Society, you know, lately in sports, They talk, well, this fellow was, he got kicked off this team, or the NFL came to a decision regarding this fellow, or the baseball association, you know, they had to deal with this fellow because they violated rules. Or, and we've had cases lately because of spouse abuse or children abuse. Society frowns on violence. It allows a humongous amount of corruption, but you have to stop just short of violence. God says you have to cut it off long before violence. You have to get a new heart. Ezekiel 11, he said he would give his people a new heart. You have to clean up. Things have to be cleaned up. You have to get, you know, there's a lot of difference in stepping outside in Sheffield on a fine morning, West Texas air, invigorating, fresh. I'm not talking about the Iran air and the gas field. I'm talking about this fresh air down here, invigorating. You know, you can take a stroll to the dumpster and you can forget about you can forget about invigorating fresh air. Doesn't usually smell all that good around a full dumpster. What about a heart? Think comparatively about hearts before God. The flood came on because people were corrupt in their hearts and even to the point of violence. That's why we have to watch what we see, where we go, our companions, because they can corrupt us. 1 Corinthians 15:33, evil companionships corrupt good morals. Writer told me a while back he'd gotten with some good guys. Now that's good. He ought to be with some good guys. And stay away from the sorry ones if there are any there on campus. Just stay away from them. Want to be with good. And see what you have with the church. When things are going right and people are acting right and thinking right and living right. Good guys. Good people. God says that's the way it has to be. Philippians 4, 8 and 9. You have to think about certain things then. In order to keep your heart in a certain condition, fill up on good things. Read and see and study and think about those things that are honorable and have virtue, have moral excellence. There be any praise at all. Think on these kinds of things. Don't be like the world that just, you know, fills its insides with garbage. Number three. Genesis 13. We have a case where somebody's interest seemed to be at risk and a conflict arose. This was between the servants of Lot and the servants of Abraham, and they were kinfolk and still living together. You know, there was a time in my life I just wanted so many of my kinfolk to be around me. I wanted to be around my kinfolk. Not just my mother and daddy and my brothers, but I had some cousins. I wanted to be around them. It would have been great if we could just all be together and live together all the time. Abraham and Lot are still living in the same place, same area, geographically. But they had so many animals now to feed. So much cattle. And so a conflict arose between the herdsmen of Lot and the herdsmen of Abraham. Abraham says, "Let there be no strife between us. We're kinfolk. We don't need to have this." But it happens over the fact that somebody thought their property was at risk. Our cattle need some more grazing. Our stock needs... You're just letting your cattle get too much. Or you're letting them get into areas where, well, we wanted that. So whether it's objective or not, subjectively they're saying our interest is at risk. We've got to protect our interest. And there was a conflict over it. And Abraham just graciously said, "Lot, just take the land. We do need to separate. You take the country you want, I'll take what you leave." Man, the generous spirit of Abraham. He wasn't worried about every little penny. You have to grow up sometimes in life to get over that. You know, just thinking about every little penny and every little dollar. You don't want to be wasteful, but sometimes we just get stingy. And we're so afraid that God is not going to give us another dollar. another penny, another cow, another blade of grass, another this, another that. And we just our souls shrink, kind of like the Grinch at Christmas. Our souls shrink. We become stingy. Instead of looking at things from the perspective of God and thinking in terms of God who cares and loves His children. Oh, if I run out of this, I'm not going to have any more. The Bible gives us stories, examples, as well as just declarative statements to inform us God knows how to keep you supplied. And still sometimes we doubt. Another instance of this comes up in chapter 21, Genesis 21, 25, when Abimelech and Abraham argue over a well of water. And you know, in a country like ours, and I'm sure where he was, that's an important thing to think about. A well of water. A dispute over a well. Well, that's a significant thing. I'm not saying these things are insignificant. I'm simply saying that in Genesis, you see the various ways that conflict surfaced among people. People just like us. And there are times in our lives still to this day when we are afraid our interests are not being served and our interests are at risk. And so we try to take the wisest course that is possible. Maybe it starts out with a discussion with a neighbor. Or if it's already escalated beyond that, it may wind up in court somewhere. But I'm saying, this world is old. And in the way that conflicts have come about, that's old too. Number four. Genesis 14. We've got a war that breaks out. And it involves the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah. And it's recorded in history because it involves Lot. And if it involves Lot, it involves Abraham. And we've got three armies to contend with in this chapter. We've got those that oppose those involved in Sodom and Gomorrah and those with them. And what happens is the people in Sodom and Gomorrah and those that are confederate with them have been paying taxes to, they're subservient to Chedorlaomer. And then they get to a point where they say, we're not going to do this anymore. We're not going to be subservient. So how does this war break out? It breaks out because one group of people have already imposed their will on another group of people. That's still a matter of just fundamental history. In America and in Europe and Asia and Africa. That's just the way it is. When one group of people imposes its will on another people. I've been reading recently some American Indian history. That stuff is so engaging. It's so interesting. A lot of it's so sad too. I tell you. But you get, why? How come we have this now? You can still see the signs where the Indians have been out here. Somebody's will lost out. But I'll tell you this, it's an old, old way for a conflict to develop when you've got people living in the same area and by means somehow or another, somebody gets the upper hand and somebody for a while imposes its will on somebody else. And then if things change, if somebody gets more powerful or gets more money or gets more this or that or just gets more courage or whatever, say, we've had enough of this. Fights break out. And it did in chapter 14 of Genesis. And Lot became one of the captives. And then, not only do we have the two armies that fought, we then got Abraham's army. A third army. He has the wherewithal to protect his property and his goods and his family. 300 armed men raised in his own household. My goodness, what a man. He's a godly man. He's a wise man. He's a smart man. He's a property man. He's an armed man. At any rate, I'm simply saying that it comes about because of will imposition. Chapter 15, verses 13 through 16. This is a prophecy, or at least it's a prediction, that God gives Abraham. And he says, Abraham, one of these days, your descendants are going to go off and they're going to be slaves. Well, that's because somebody imposes their will. Egypt imposes its will on the Hebrews. But in the fourth generation, your descendants are going to come to this land right here where you are. For the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. The time will come when your descendants will impose their will on those who inhabit the land right now. Now, he does not go into all of the detail about right and wrong that we later will read about by the time of Joshua, when the iniquity of the Canaanites caused the land to vomit them out. He doesn't go into the detail, but he does give the fact. The iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. But at least you have those two cases in Genesis where you're talking about conflict arises because humans impose their wills on other humans. Now there's some of that that's just necessary. Child rearing, parents impose their will on kids all the time. The way it has to be. But you get to a certain level of social intercourse where there is non-domestic problem. There are non-domestic problems. Number five. Let me mention one more and I'll stop. There are several cases of this in Genesis. Conflict that arises over children. Over somebody's children. You know, children are something else. There's something to see. There's something to watch. And your own children, your own grandchildren, there's just something about just watching them, you know, listening to them, observing them. They just bring joy to your heart for a while. While they're little and small and pliable and all of that. And then later they can go off and break your heart. In the book of Genesis, we have conflict over children. Chapter 16, verse 4, Hagar despises Sarah after Hagar got pregnant. Now, we know the details of that, and we're not discussing the full-fledged story of that. But after Abraham takes his second wife, who in fact was a slave, Sarah's slave, and she is pregnant, and then she despises Hagar. You mean to tell me that one woman can despise another woman? Surely not. Surely not. Well, it has happened. On at least a few occasions in history. Genesis 21 verses 9 and 10. When Ishmael, the product, mocks Isaac, Sarah says, in effect, that's enough. Abraham, that woman's got to go. That woman's got to go. And it hurt Abraham because that was his child, Ishmael. Both of these boys are his children. God says, Abraham. You know, we're talking in 1 John 3 this morning about how God knows our frame. He's the one that framed us. He's the one that formed us. He made us. He understands how our emotion works, what hurts us, and what ought to hurt us, how we ought to feel. I'm fixing to lose a son. Abraham, it's okay. I'll take care of that boy. I'll make of him a great nation. You don't worry about that. You just do what Sarah wants you to do in this case. And he faithfully does it. Faithfully does it. But the conflict over the children. Chapter 37, verse 4, you get to the case of Joseph's brothers. They hate him. You know his reporting of his dreams and all of that. And he's a favored son. His daddy made him this special coat. And they just can't stand him. But the marvelous providence of God is at work, interweaving itself in the emotions and the wills of the brothers and the steadfast character of Joseph. And by Joseph, he's going to save his family from starvation. It's a marvelous account of providence. But it involved the conflict of children, Jacob's children, that could not get along. Chapter 30, verse 1, you've got the conflict between Rachel and Leah over pregnancy, over kids, over children. And Rachel keeps hoping, now my husband's going to favor me more. He's going to love me more. But it's always over the children, over all of that. Well, the children have been a an occasion of heartache, either our attitudes toward them or their willfulness, sometimes themselves. A lot of problems in history have come about because of the children. There's so many more, and I'll talk about a few of these this afternoon. But it's interesting to me that there's so many things that stay the same. And the way that the first problems came about on the earth, it's insightful, it's informative to think about the way that they occurred and then look around and see the way that things go in life today. May God help us to have further appreciation for all that He's told us and had in His book. Let's learn from it and live in the light of it and be faithful unto Him. If you're here this morning and not a Christian, come in faith, repent of your sins, make the good confession, be baptized into Christ. If you've done that and gone astray, we encourage you to come home now. While together we stand, while we sing, won't you come?